Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 81. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.324. Sri Devaki said, My dear Lord, there are different Vedas, some of which describe you as imperceptible through words and the mind, yet you are the origin of the entire cosmic manifestation. You are Brahman, the greatest of everything, full of effulgence like the sun. You have no material cause. You are free from change and deviation, and you have no material desires. Thus the Vedas say you are the substance. Therefore, my Lord, you are directly the origin of all Vedic statements. By understanding you, one gradually understands everything. You are different from the light of Brahman and Paramatma, yet you are not different from them. Everything emanates from you. Indeed, you are the cause of all causes. Lord Vishnu, the light of all transcendental knowledge. Adhyatma, Deepaha. So this transcendental knowledge, this light, that's all coming from him. That's the important aspect here. Is that he is what is he is the source of all knowledge. Whatever there is, it's coming from him. Right? So all these contradictory aspects that's mentioned here, he's imperceptible, but at the same time he's the source of all knowledge. Right? He's the, you know, he's the, how you say, he has no change and deviation at the same time as that there's no desires. It's no material desire. It's all just happening because of his own, absorption in his own existence. So even though there's variety, that variety is a permanent position. So there's no change. It doesn't mean that there's not, things aren't, the manifestations aren't adjusting. But that principle that they're adjusting, that's always there. Does that make sense? And the principle is they're always eternal, because all those aspects are there. So in the material world, we see that there's change. But within the energy, that's it. The energy is not creating that variety, and the energy is not maintaining the variety, right? The material energy. So all that variety is coming from Krishna. That's coming from his internal potency. That's eternal. And so that potency has that unlimited variety. Just which ones are manifest at which time. So the material world's manifestation of these varieties is actually temporary. Because it's not coming from the external potency. It's coming from internal potency. Right? External potency has no variety. So that's the fun part, is the impersonalists are thinking that the material world has all the variety, so spiritual must be the opposite. But if we actually look at it, material energy has no variety. It's just pradhan. It's only when you add the Lord's potency, then you get variety. So it's by association with the Lord through his glance that you get variety. Otherwise, there'd be no variety. Right? So if we want to take him as opposite, yes. But because the living entities, basically you can say in ignorance by their being in the material world, they don't know their relationship with the Lord. Therefore, due to ignorance, they reverse everything. So in actuality, its material energy has no variety. Spiritual energy has unlimited variety. That's the nature. Right? So this is non-living, that's living. So if you want to take the opposite, yes, but you have to take it from the natural position. But being in contact with the Lord, then it takes on all those qualities. Does that make sense? Just like the living entity in contact with the Lord then takes on so many nice qualities. Yes?
We see that majority of our study is about tattva, with the goal to attain rasa. And actually what's interesting for Krishna is only rasa. But still, the majority of things are about tattva.
Yes.
Why is that?
Because unless you understand the tattva, you won't understand the rasa. See, the point is rasa, but what kind of rasa? Is it Vaikuntha rasa, Swargiya rasa, or Partiva rasa? Because rasa is one entity. It has these three varieties, just like Krishna is one entity. But he has these different features. So rasa is one thing with different features. So we only, basically, you could say, look at Partiva. And then we don't mind the Swargiya, as long as it doesn't get in the way of our Partiva rasa. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Unless we understand tattva, we won't make a distinction between these different aspects of rasa. And if we can analyze within the tattva, then we can appreciate and analyze within the rasa. Because as we remember before, we go through all the different aspects, like let's say within the Jiva Dharma. So the different things on the holy name, the this, the this, and that, but when it actually got into rasa, then it was too technical. Because we're not used to that level of technicality. So now we're getting the Vedanta Sutra, this kind of technicality, then you'll be able to appreciate rasa, because rasa means its taste, it's very fine. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. It's just like, let us say there is a delicate discussion between husband and wife. Okay? So what makes it progress nicely, or what makes it go, you know, horribly wrong?
His response.
Yes, but is that response based on this whole soliloquy, or it's even like one syllable or the tone, you understand? So that's the thing, is when we can analyze down to that fineness, then we can apply it there, just like in meditation, in the yoga process. So you're controlling the what you're doing so that the mind can become peaceful, you can sit. Then you're doing asana so that you can actually properly sit. Then having done asana, then you can start on pranayama so you can control the breathing. Having stopped the breathing, then you can pull in the senses. Having pulled in the senses, now you can focus on one point. Okay, so that's six stages. Having focused on one point, you're focused, now you can put Vishnu there as the point of meditation. Then deepening that, you come to samadhi. Right? So we see is that even though it seems so simple, it's actually the advanced stages, meditation and samadhi. And the first six, then they are considered the lower. What's it? Yoga, what's it?
Rudha.
Huh?
Yoga Rudha.
Yoga Rudha is the lower or the higher? Yoga Ruruksu.
And Yoga Ruruksu.
Yoga Ruruksu is the first six. Yeah. Yoga Rudha is the top two. So we can see is therefore, looking at that kind of as a yogic proportion, then when we can understand tattva up to that point where that very fineness, because what does meditation mean? Doesn't just mean it's a generic kind of like, you know, billboard perspective. The example is given of pouring honey. You know, when honey comes out, it's very wide out of the mouth of the jar. And then it goes right down to super, super thin. You know, doesn't matter how big it is, you pour it, it will do that. Even the biggest jar, you take like a 10-liter jar of honey and pour it, it'll come out very wide and then go down to that super thin. So that's what you're trying to do, is you're starting with that wide, but you're having to be able to focus on one little thing at once. Because the whole point is to be able to catch means we're having, you know, it's like if it's very straightforward, then we catch it. When we're having to deal with subtleties of two or three different formulas at once, it's difficult. Now it's easier, no? Yeah, but before it was difficult. Now you're dealing with, okay, you have the Stai Bhava, that's straightforward, okay? But then with the Stai Bhava, then you have what inspires that Stai Bhava, right? Which aspect of Krishna is there? So it's not just any aspect, it's the specific aspect. The ones that inspire Mother Yashoda aren't necessarily the same ones that inspire the other rasas. There'll be some overlaps, of course, but it's not always exactly the same. Then having inspired that, then there's going to be the symptoms of ecstasy that are there. Then there'll be the ones that are the physical. But then if you look at them, some of them are the same. Right? In Anubhav, the crying, and in the Sattvic Bhav, the crying, they're both there. It's just crying. So there's a difference, because one is the mental aspect, one's the physical aspect. Right? Then on top of that, you have the Sanchari Bhavas, which are just transitory. They come and go in moments. So to be able to appreciate all those things happening at once, all at one time. So, does that make sense? Now, if we practice on tattva, how much problem we'll have? Right? You understand? But if we try to apply that within rasa, now if you're making a mistake, that's rasa bas, that will not be pleasing to Krishna. Does that make sense? Well, the tattva, then we're learning. He reveals. So the whole point is this revelation, because we can say, oh, we can study rasa, but are we studying rasa? We're just trying to enjoy the rasa. Now, that is connected to Krishna, and that's fine, as long as it's coming in the parampara with the proper attitude. That's why Prabhupada, when he's discussing about these pastimes, then he's always pointing out the particular attitudes and moods and surrender and all that. That makes sense? Because the point is if it's Krishna's the only thing of importance, then the taste that is gained from there, then that becomes significant. But now if in our own life we have so many tastes that are important, and then okay, we add Krishna to that as a taste, but he's not the taste, he's a taste. And after how long until we understand that he is the taste? Yeah, so that's the whole thing. Otherwise it's, you know, we're in the temple, the kirtan's there, you know, class, or somebody's giving a nice, you know, discussion of Krishna's pastimes. We're fully absorbed in all that. And we'll go along and we forget everything else, and it's so nice. But then let's say there's a break or something, or, you know, something like that. Then, you know, that's when we look at our watch, we start thinking that, look at our phone again, you know, think of things that we'd have to do, and okay, from here, then I won't go straight home, I'll go by the shop, pick up this and that, and, you know, so then this whole other process starts. Though it's all connected to Krishna, but it's not connected on that platform of rasa. So these other things we like to do because we can control them, we'll get benefit from them and that, but they're connected to Krishna, so we're getting purified. But it's still not on the same platform as it's just being done to please Krishna. So that's the thing, is our conditioning then gets in the way. So once we get to the point where we give up the attachment to that conditioning, that's when the taste in rasa can be appreciated. Does that make sense? Because that's actually what it is. So the analyzation of rasa is just so that we understand the various tastes that are there. Does that make sense? Like that. That's it. So it's a slight difference.
Is it correct to say that if we actually understand rasa, that we will be able to taste it within tattva?
You can, because the point is there's Krishna's non-dual, so they're the same thing. It's just that one is analyzing the situation of it. You know, in other words, the sambandhi gyan. Who is Krishna? Who are we? Who's Krishna's energies? What's our relationship? Like that. What is the process? What are the results that can be gained? What's the proper attitude? That's tattva. Right? Then applying that, that's abhideya, that's devotional service. And then getting the results of that devotional service, that's prayojan. So even though we're getting results, we're not necessarily paying as much attention to them as we are to the knowledge and the process and the result gained in the way of the form of it. Right? So we're used to there are forms and there's activities that you can do with forms to generate more forms. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what we're used to. We're not used to the taste, because in dealing with the material energy, there is no taste. In dead matter, there's no taste. It just doesn't exist. We'll say it exists, but that taste we're getting is actually Krishna. It's only because Krishna entered it, there's some taste. But the amount of energy, just a spark of his splendor, he manifests the whole material cosmos, right? So the whole Mahatattva. So that means one spark of his unlimited splendor is all that runs here, and there's unlimited universes, and each universe has 14 planetary systems, and each of these systems then has so many living entities on it, and then within that we're just one thing. So how much are we getting? Right? But compared to nothing, let's say, you know, you have this, like we say, a football stadium, it's black, and then at one end there's somebody there with one candle. Then we'll notice, okay, there's some light there. We'll be attracted by that, even though it's not actually that much, compared to the daytime when the sun's up and the whole stadium is filled with light. Does that make sense? So like that, we were adjusted to this little bit, and that little bit, even that's Krishna. So it's dead matter. It's not actually giving any taste. How can it give taste? You know, you know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point is... I think the example, that thing is, I think, not sure if it's Sutta or Sukadeva Goswami, give the example of the senses and the sub-objects is like if you took, you know, some, like a piece of wood or something and rubbed it on the wall. You know, like that. So you're not experiencing anything. Now, only if you have an attachment to that wall or that piece of wood, you know, you've just repainted the wall and that's some special, you know, wooden thing like that, and then the kid picks it up and starts rubbing it on the wall. Then you get some feel because of attachment. But actually, the two things connecting, you, there's nothing there. Right? It's only because we project, then it appears that there's something. That's why it says it appears to be real, though it's not actually. Right? It exists, that's the reality. But what we think it is and what we're gaining from it, that's not real. So, in other words, it's not so much of tasting the rasa and the tattva, they're non-different. The tattva is just the situation and activities that are there. Rasa is the mood in which it's done. So when it's done on the platform of prema, that means then that's the taste that's gained. But on the material, the taste we gain is coming from lust. Right? So you have the Brahma Bhuta platform, right? Or the neutral platform that the living entity is from. Right? Tattastha means they're from that neutral position. Right? It's not separate from internal and external, because otherwise then we wouldn't be coming from the samdit potency, right? So we're coming from that internal potency, but we're right on the edge. So being on the edge, then you can see both. Just like, let us say, forget where it is. There's some famous road going through, maybe it's in China or something. It's this road that it's also in South America. There's a few of them in the world. It's just wide enough basically for one vehicle. Going up from there, it's a, you know, huge cliff, and going down, it's, you know, thousands of feet like that. I think then going up to Badri, it's the same thing, but it's a two-lane road, right? So now can you look over the edge and see the abyss? Yes, but where are you standing? You're standing on the road. So that's the point, is we're from the internal potency, we're an extension of that, but we're situated on the internal potency, but we're on the edge so we can see Maya, right? And because we're in a neutral position, therefore we could look either way, towards the internal or towards the external. That's the meaning of the neutral. because the internal potency only is positive, so it only looks at Krishna. That's its nature. So we're on that edge. Now, if we look at Maya, then we're under the control of Maya, because we're not independent. It's not like there's internal potency, there's a gap where we are, and then there's external potency. So the internal and external are touching, and we're on that edge where it touches, because the Tathasta Shakti is what holds the two together. Right? But that control of that Tathasta is internal potency. Right? So Yoga Maya controls it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then therefore is that aspect of that's what's in the middle, then you can take that. Now to one side you see is the internal potency, so prema. But the material world, what's the basis there? Right? Lust. Right? So those are the two opposites of each other. So when you pervert prema, you get lust. So same process. Just one's going towards Krishna, one's going away from Krishna. That's why Krishna says there's one path. You know, it's the same thing, it's just reversed. Does that make sense? You know, when you go, how you say, through the looking glass, then everything's backwards. Same thing. Does that make sense? So that's what we're dealing with here. So it's, tattva is only, is describing the situation. You know, the sambandha gyan. So like that. That's what is there. So rasa is describing the taste in prayojana, right? So that also is running at the same time. But the point is the icha shakti is functioning, and all these things are going on. But there's a basis for that: the forms, the activities, the attitudes. All those things are what make the taste appreciated. That makes sense.
Is it that devotees, they appreciate rasa more and tattva less? Because when devotees come together in the association, there is no discussion of tattva. It's only that the rasa that is discussed.
Even rasa is only occasionally discussed. How many people can discuss rasa? How many people can tell a story and it's really absorbing? You know, go on for hours. You know, Radhanath Maharaj can do Giriraj Maharaj, Indradyumna Maharaj, you know, a few like this, they can do it. Govinda Maharaj, they can tell. And you can really appreciate the moods and the relationship that's going on. But if you're just describing the technical points, that's technically tattva also. See, rasa is tasted. Then the knowledge of rasa, that's the science. So technically that's tattva. It's just that's prayojana tattva. We're only used to sambandha tattva, and that only certain aspects. Mm-hmm. Abhideya tattva, who discusses that also? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so sambandha jnana, that aspect will be discussed, but it's not that the knowledge of the other two is not there. Like for regular classes on devotional process, I think, I don't know about now, but before, back in the 80s and 90s, Bhakti Churumaraj would always be doing classes on you know, nectar devotion, on, you know, the Vaishnava etiquette, and like this. And then sometimes, what's his name? Sachinandan Maharaj will talk on, you know, the name and things like that. You know, and a few others like that, I think Vaisheshika, and, you know, who like that will discuss process. But otherwise, who discusses deity worship? Who discuss it, you know what I'm saying? So a little bit on the holy name. So we've kind of caught that because it is the process for this age, so we've kind of caught that because it's obvious. So as we go with time, then we include all these others more and more. But it doesn't mean that central feature of the holy name doesn't maintain like that. Right? And that developing love for Krishna doesn't maintain. It's just the detail of it. So it's just a matter of you talk about what's important to you. Does that make sense? No training, we can talk gossip all day. Right? This is kind of like inherent.
Natural.
You know. Or you can just say at least by association, you know, so you know how to respond to the gossip. You know, whether you say, oh my God, you know, just how you're going to respond. You understand? Yeah. So the material we've been practicing since time immemorial, so it shouldn't be surprising that the spiritual, which basically we have not been practicing since time immemorial, so that's the new thing. It's the natural thing, it's the inherent thing, but it's new. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's like, how is it, I think it was Romulus and Ramses, mm-hmm. You know, they were brought up by wolves. So I'm sure once they were found by humans, it probably there was a slight, what do you call it? Adjustment period. You know, before they started, you know, walking around on their hands and not howling at the moon, right? Does that make sense? You know, and then once they adjusted, then they went on and built Rome. So then, you know, it works out. So that's the whole thing. It takes some time. So you shouldn't be surprised why these things aren't going on. Be impressed with that living entities that have been in the material world since time immemorial are actually interested in Krishna. Right? So this technical pointing out weaknesses, that's just so that we know that there's more, so we don't become lax or take it for granted. But in actuality, that anybody's chanting, you know, come in contact with the holy name and is chanting, you know, that's impressive. Because it's definitely not Kali Raja's arrangements. You know, it's not what he was... It's not his portfolio, right? So if it can be avoided, he will avoid it. Is that okay? Okay. Adhikarana 10. The jiva is not the Lord. Artan taradikaranam. Sutra reference 1.3, 41-43. Adhikarana Prakashaka. Adhikarana 10 establishes that the akasha, ether, which reveals nama and rupa, names and forms, is neither the element ether nor the individual soul, but the highest Brahman. Summary of Adhikarana 10. Vishaya. In the Chandogya Upanishad 4.8.14.1 is the following statement. Sky is the creator of names and forms. That sky within is expanded without limit. That sky is eternal. That sky is the self. Okay, so this is where our what do you call it? Vishaya Vakya. Right? Shamsaya. Does the word sky here refer to the jiva liberated from bondage of repeated birth and death, or does sky here refer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purvapaksha. The scriptures say, Ashva Iva Romani Vidyuya Papam. As a horse shakes its mane, so do I shake off all sins and become liberated. This shows that the sky here refers to the liberated jiva, right? Because they're just taking the words that connect. The words yad antara, which is within, clearly points to the liberated jiva who is free from all names and forms, right? But the fun part is he was within when he wasn't liberated also. So what's so special now? Why she would be called within. Okay. This is also so because the phrase creator of names and forms may refer to the jiva before he was liberated. The word akasha, right? Because he'll, with his material consciousness, he's going to then create names and forms. But you can say is that he is attracted to and absorbed in names and forms, but the actual names he didn't create and the forms he didn't create. Those are created from the Lord in the primary Brahma and the secondary creation. You know, but we're saying we're attached to, so therefore we're absorbed in that, so we're creating. But we're only taking part as an instrument in that. So that's the point, we're never the Lord.
What?
Right?
Hmm. But didn't we discuss Akasha already?
But this is another aspect. You know, you understand? So it's let us say you want something really seriously. And then someone says, no. You know, but what about, you know, and then you go back to other things. No, but here at this time you said this, and that time you said that. So we're always going to go out and try to catch whatever. So this is just another aspect of, okay, here, sky is a creator of names and forms. That sky within is expanded without limit. The sky is eternal. That sky is the self. So here's another verse on sky. And so from this one, okay, that one I couldn't prove that I'm the Supreme, but this one I think I can do. So we'll just keep trying. You know, that's how you say, hope against hope. Yeah. The word akasha here means effulgence. Everything therefore indicates that the sky here is the liberated jiva. The words tad brahma, tad amritam, it is expanded without limit. It is eternal. Describe the qualities of the jiva attains when he becomes liberated. They say that, but the point is how does he become eternal? You know, how does he become unlimited? How does something limited become unlimited? You know what I'm saying? It just doesn't make sense. A drop doesn't become the ocean. Otherwise, if the drop becomes the ocean, then why does he have to merge into the ocean to become the ocean? He already is the ocean, so therefore either he's not there, or on the land suddenly you have an ocean. You know, forget the tsunami in between. It just suddenly there's a... Okay. Siddhanta. The conclusion follows. Akasho antaravadi vyaparishat. The sky here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the sky described here is different from the liberated jiva, and for other reasons also. Right? Does that make sense? So, we see here is that in this process, now who's going to be studying Vedanta Sutra? Right? Is this, you know, third grade material or something, you know? Right, that as soon as you can do handwriting, then you start on Vedanta Sutra. No, it's going to be scholars. And so scholars then, they'll have studied logic. Right? So since they studied logic, they understand how logic works. So you don't have to break it down into all of its parts. You just have to point, okay, this is what you say, this is what we say. But how they're going to do that is going to be in the same process. Does that make sense? So the Panchanga Nyaya is going to be there, but it's not broken down into that form. It's contained within because you already know. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you learn to drive, and when you can drive, then you drive around. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Is that when you just get in the car, you just do all the different things.
Is it? Yeah. As Nathan, you said about Akash, and then we're discussing it for the second time. So isn't that they're using the tarka of the Nyaya? Because they're again repeating the same thing. So like, just getting the same
thing. It's just another angle. It is tarka. But the point is that, yes, it's tarka. But what they're doing is just trying to bring another angle. So it's been defeated on one point. From there, they could understand. Right? You know, it's just like a pot of rice is there. And I want to check if it's cooked. Right? Now, how many grains do I need to squeeze to check?
Only one.
Only one. Okay. Now, what if I have a theory that this other person cannot cook? They absolutely don't know what they're doing. I'm the only one that knows how to cook in this kitchen. They do not know. I've been here forever. They just came into the kitchen. They cannot know. Right? It's because it's been said that, no, they could cook. No, only I can cook. Okay? So now we take up the thing and say, you know, let them cook. Yeah, let them cook. Then you'll see, right? The other person's thinking, let them cook, then you'll all understand that they can cook. But I'm thinking, yes, let them cook, then you'll understand that they can't cook, and then you'll leave me alone and leave me to the cooking. Okay? Okay. Now, they've cooked the rice. Now I go there with my attitude and my ego and my, I say, that overconfidence and all these, you know, great qualities that I feel that are important. And I go over to the pot and with, you know, great drama, remove the lid and then reach in and grab one grain of rice. Okay. It's just grass. It had arms and legs and it would grass and stuff like that. So now, I take one of those grains of rice and with that, you know, self-assured confidence, I squeeze it. Now what happened? It's cooked. Am I just going to stop at that one, or I'm going to get another one and another one? I'm going to keep going until I've exhausted how many grains of rice to list. Like, how is this possible? And then I'll have a mental breakdown and all this, and, you know, they'll have to take me away in a straitjacket and like that. Okay? That's what's going on here. So they're so confident that the jiva is Brahman, that all these different, and all these verses that they use, and then you're showing how it doesn't show their Brahman. They're totally freaking out. You understand? That's the whole point. Okay? So don't be surprised that they bring it up again. They'll just keep like that, you know. Okay, so here, then they'll say here, okay, then they made their point. The samshaya, that's there. That's the doubt, but what is it for them? Yeah, that's their vishaya. Right? So that's going to be their pratigya. Right? Now that's their doubt. Then they'll say, the scriptures say, as a horse shakes my head, so this shows that the sky refers to the liberated jiva. So now that's their reason. Right? So that's the second one. Right? What's that? Hatred. Yeah. Then they're going to go on to go ahead. The words here clearly points to the liberated jiva, who is free from all names and forms. Now what are they doing? They're doing their Udaharana. You understand? Right? So they're going through the creator names, so everything therefore. And then now here's the, what do you call it? Upanaya. There, everything therefore indicates that the sky here is the liberated jiva. Right? So then here, the words Tad Brahma expand without limit. It is eternal. Describe the qualities that jiva attains when he is liberated. That's their siddhanta. You understand? So they go through all five. We go through all five. But because you're dealing with people who know all this, you don't have to ask. So therefore, we just say Vishaya Shamshaya Purvapaksha Siddhanta. You understand? So it's not a different system. It's the same system being done. It's the same system. Right? All it is it's being done in this way so that you go through. If you want to break it down, you can. Big one, right? Put what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay, is this clear? Because otherwise there's this confusion of all there's two different, this one system. Just one is so it's clear this is how it is, this is the textbook and that's how it's based on. Those who can do that, then you can just refer to this, because you know when they have their doubt, they're going to go through all that. They're going to try to absorb your philosophy in theirs. And we're going to do ours and theirs and ours. Does that make sense? Sutra 1341. Akash. The clock. Can you try to find the clock and get it working and put it back up there? Because down here I don't always notice it. There it's easier to. Not right now. See if you can get it working for tomorrow. Sutra 1341. Akashorn tantaratvadi vyapadeshat. Akasha. Sky, arta, meaning. Antaratva, difference, adi, beginning with. Vyapadeshat, because of the description. Right? So now if you have two persons who are just arguing, then, you know, what do you need to be successful in this? Right? You need the skills, right? Cleverness, you know, who has the better vocabulary, who has the better understanding of the technique, who knows more verses or more like this. Does that make sense? That's why we don't put that much faith in logic, because who just has more material facility, better able to use it, they're better. Doesn't mean that they're necessarily better just at that moment. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, two cars are racing, okay? Then the one guy's in the lead, but then he runs out of petrol. The other guy wins. Now, according to the rule, he's the winner. But is he actually the better driver? No. He may have had a better strategy, but he's not the better driver. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that logic does not necessitate that you come up with actually the most intelligent plan or the concept. Seven cents. You get it? Yes.
There are three kinds of discussion. One is after the absolute truth, and the truth is the important.
Right.
Then the second one is that people just, the opponents trying to establish that they are the best.
Yes. Yes.
And the third one is just for exercise, just for fun.
Yes.
So the Mayavadi, what is there?
The second.
The second.
Yeah, because it's kind of like you could say they're quasi-spiritualists, if you want to be very technical. Just like in the levels of consciousness. Then in generic, if we're looking at the broader, then you have the one who's the immoralist. Right? Then you have the atheistic moralist. Then you have the quasi-moralist or quasi-theistic moralist, right? So why we say quasi is that it's not actually about transcendence. They know the Lord is there to some degree in some aspect, but it's either for karma, so from their dharma they want artha and kama, right? Or it's for moksha, so it's a dharma, it means that the dharma is used for moksha. But it's not actually come to the point of the Supreme, because the Supreme means, all aspects. So only then when you come to Vaidhi Bhakti, then you can say, now these are real theists. So those who take up the devotional prana, they're actually theists. Then those who come to the platform of Rag or Prema, then that's your topmost platform of real theists. Does that make sense? So in that, we see is that platform of Dharma can be used for three different things. For artha, moksha, or bhakti. That's the thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we see by their consciousness that they're not actually really real transcendentalists. You know, the quasi-transcendentalists in the way of that they're interested in transcendence, they're interested in the Lord as Brahman, but because they don't see Brahman as part one feature of the Lord, as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, then they're not actually, they have a material concept. So the impersonal concept of the Lord is technically a material concept. It's about the Lord. They have some realization by the Lord's, you know, reveals, but it's still tinted with the material concept because they don't see the other aspects of the Lord. Because you won't find it in the spiritual world. It's only a concept within the material world. Some individuals get bent out of shape by this. No, but it's Brahman, it's this and that. But it's not Brahman of the in the spiritual world, it's Brahman here in the material world. You know, it's the same Brahman. It's all pervading, but it's only what's on this side, because those individuals don't get out of here. And even if they do get out of here, then the tridents around Goloka take care of them, so you know, what's the point in getting out, you know? That would be like, you know, you make this whole prison break, get out of prison only to be, you know, as soon as you get out, there's 20 guys out there with machine guns, and they shoot you. So it's not like, like Bonnie and Clyde, I think it was like 150 bullets or something. Or, you know, so. And what's the advantage? Does that make sense? So they're only arguing for arguing's sake because of their material. You can say as no, but they want to know about Brahman and that. No, they want to be God. They want to... In other words, they're frustrated in the material enjoyment, so they're replacing that with even more enjoyment. It's just like, okay, what do you tell a child? They had a problem with something, really frustrated. You know, they can get something better later, or you can't do that now, but later we'll get something really big or something. That's all the Mayavadis are doing. I can't enjoy here. So they're smart enough to understand that, but they're not smart enough to understand that replacing it with this concept of being Brahman is not actually the answer. So they only know partial. So that's why we say quasi. Now, those who are actually looking for the absolute truth, are actually interested in Siddhanta, then coming in contact with the Vaishnavas, they'll take up devotional service like Prakashananda Saraswati or Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. That's an example of them. Right? So if there is a sincerity, no matter what is there, if they're sincerely look, let's say someone's sincerely looking, you know, just to be happy, just like that. They don't know what it is, but just happy or, you know, social perfection or any whatever it is, but they're sincerely looking for that itself will be the ultimate position and all that. So they're looking for what's the ultimate and they think it's that, so they'll just keep moving up as they come in contact. But if they're not, they're attached to a particular position, you can't get them past that. You know, the example given of a person who's asleep, feigning to be asleep, you can't wake up. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. That's why you see, sometimes you see, that's why we'll say so-called scholars. Because much of the time these scholars have come in contact with our philosophy in that way more than the common person, but they can't see the importance of it. So are they actually scholars? What's their actual purpose? You know, so then it's more just the position, the security. Like, what's the topmost, I don't know about around the world, but like at least in the American universities, the topmost position you can have in a university, the perfection, is called tenure. Tenure. Tenure means you're so senior they can't throw you out even if they want to. So in other words, you toe the line until you get tenure, then you can talk whatever you want, do whatever you want, they can't throw you out. Now if you want to progress more and get more facility and more recognition, of course you still behave yourself. But they're looking for that. So tenure is the perfection they want. So it's not actually that knowledge and that teaching and all that. It happens to be an area that they like making their money in. They're comfortable with that. That's the whole point of occupation, is you're comfortable in that. But it's not that that's the perfection. It's just like the Brahman. He's doing all these activities. What's his purpose in performing all these six occupations of a Brahman? Is it for the material benefit? So for karma, is it for liberation, is jnana, or is it for bhakti? So in other words, the occupations or what you're doing, where you're situated is one thing. What tools you're using or what you want from it is another. Like we have a first class kitchen. The chef is cooking all these different things. But what's the purpose? Sense gratification. Right? Does that make sense? For us and for him, stars. Right? You know, unless he's down at, you know, Joe's Greasy Spoon or something, you know, that's another thing. That, you know, it pays the bills. Yes?
So Mayavada exists only in Kali
Yuga? It Mayavada specific means you'll have it in the other yugas. Like it mentions, he mentioned before, Astavakra, Dattatreya.
Aren't they Brahmavadis?
They'll be generally Brahmavadis, but the you could say is yes, in Kali Yuga then you'll have Mayavadis. But Brahmavadis will have in the other ages, but it's still a material concept. You could say is Brahmavad is a material concept, Mayavad is actually a hellish concept. You know, it doesn't actually get them anywhere. It just makes them think they're getting somewhere. You know, therefore the prestige and this, if it's all illusion, why are they so attached to their prestige of being a great scholar, a sannyasi, you know, living in Varanasi, you know. Does that make sense? You know, it's just everybody has to move out of the way when they come. And if they don't, it's an offense, don't you? But I thought it's all illusion. You know, so that's the whole difficulty. Is that?
Yeah.
So, we were getting into something there. Yeah, no, it was some other point on the... Oh, now, so you can see is that you just need skill. Good intelligence, good skill to be able to argue. To use logic and argue and be successful. But now, let us say one actually has proper understanding and faith. Right? Now, when you're discussing or using logic to present, you know, as we see Prabhupada and the Acharyas would, what's required? What's actually required to be successful? Knowledge is there, but they have knowledge. Devotion, yes, is yes. But now to apply this, yes, if you say devotion, but which qualities are necessary?
Attitude.
An attitude of?
Serving the Lord.
So, yeah, humility, that tolerance. In other words, you're speaking the absolute truth. You have that full faith. You have that realization. And the other person you're talking to, whatever they're talking is total nonsense. So what you're saying is logical. What they're saying is not. How are you going to win? By using good qualities. In other words, if you're tolerant, you're humble, all these different things, then they presented this, and you can present from another angle, another angle, another angle. That takes tolerance until it works, because it's now your understanding against their lack of understanding. It's not logic against logic. You understand? So Tarka is logic against logic. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that you're going beyond that. That's why the good qualities are important. Then you can preach nicely. Because technically speaking, on one level, everyone's an idiot. Because they don't know the Supreme. But it's not that they don't have all kinds of qualities that are there from their karma that they've gained from the Supreme. So they have knowledge, they have, you know, whatever different things that they have. But they're temporary, and so they don't actually apply within this. It'll be based on attachment. Right? But they're using good qualities to express their attachment, you know, or not, you know, using good qualities. But the point is you need to have these finer qualities of the Vaishnava that's necessary to actually be good at preaching. So that means that the Trinadapi Sunichena, this aspect, that has to be there. Now, What's the key? What's the difference? You don't want anything material. You're not looking for respect. That's why then you can keep always connected to the Supreme, right? If we're humble, tolerant, right? Respecting others, not looking for respect, then we can be absorbed. If we're absorbed, then we can give up material desire. You give up material desire, now you can, now whatever they're saying, you can deal with, because theirs is always based on material desire. So that's it. And then what will take you through then is that taste, that interest in Krishna's name, right? What's that? So that I'm just your servant. So therefore, that's why then we're preaching and taking up this. And so then that's something that's what you're trying to get through. Now you're going to use the tattva at their position to logically show them what is the position of what they're looking for. Is valid as long as they're looking for it in Krishna consciousness. They're looking outside of Krishna consciousness, it never has, never will give you any satisfaction. Does that make sense? So you can see is what Lord Chaitanya is giving, this is how it works. Right? So we'll just look at 8 verses. But the point is, you know, okay, that's just 8 verses. There's so many others have written so many more, but if you take the essence of everything, the whole Vedic literature, and could go down into 8 verses. Now, who can do that? Right? God. Okay, so now, so this is where it is. So we're keeping it, keep it simple, but everything comes out of it. Does that make sense?
As you mentioned, Acharyas,
louder,
Acharyas, they have the qualities, the devotees and so on.
Yes.
The reason why they keep on explaining them.
Yes. Even though they keep on explaining, even though you go, Akash again? Yeah. And this isn't the first time that we've complained about Akash, right? This is, I think, the 3rd or 4th time.
Can I say that when they put their arguments, so even they are consistently tolerant, but the areas are mutually exclusive of the two arguments?
It's not that they're necessarily tolerant. How many people who are arguing is out of tolerance? If there's some culture, then they may behave a little bit that, but that's because of culture. But if you push it beyond that, then they won't be. You know, just like, who was it? Bhrigu. How well did that work out for Brahma and Shiva? Right? So that's the whole point, is if he stays within the culture, though, everybody will behave nicely. Right? Those from culture. Right? The yantijas by nature, they behave outside of the culture even when they shouldn't. But, you know, that's their culture, is to behave outside of the culture. So within there, but if it goes beyond that, it's a problem. So the point is that you have to get through all that with the preaching. So that's going to take that commitment to Krishna consciousness, that surrender to the Lord, that faith in the instructions of Guru. Because otherwise, I've heard people say, oh, I've talked to these guys and they have some very good arguments. He says, yeah, arguments are arguments. It's not that good, but is it spiritual? You know what I'm saying? A Lamborghini is a fine piece of mechanics. But is it spiritual? No. So the whole point is that's the whole thing. It's not that just because it's a good argument, we take it, oh, if it's a good argument, then it must be spiritual. No, it just means that they got some brains and they sat around and thought about it, and so then they came up with it. But it doesn't mean that it's of value. You know, they're quoting here, how are they, as a horse shakes its mane, they're quoting from all these different points that in one way, in certain places in the Shastra, it would be understood this way. But they're just using chala and taking something out of context. And so therefore, then they don't know. Now they don't necessarily even know that they're doing that, but due to their attachment, that's what they're doing. So they're using good points. But it doesn't mean that it has any value. You know, just like, let's say I'm trying to fry the potatoes, okay? Now I walk in with this, you know, 25,000 rupee blender. Top of the line. You know, it's the chef's choice in the world, you know? In fact, all the ads are in French, so you know it's like that. You had to get a friend to, you know, translate it for you. Like that. Best there is, you know, you just got it. Now you bring it to the kitchen. Here, use this. But is it going to help you frying your potatoes? So then, that's the point, is just because they use good logic and this and that doesn't mean, because the point is Krishna says he's Siddhanta. All the other 15 points of logic, Krishna says, I'm not that. Of course, he's the potency in that, but of them, he's Siddhanta. So when that's the goal, is actual Siddhanta in connection with the Lord, then the whole process works nicely. So we have to be very clear there. It's not that they don't come up with smart things. Like if you talk to a nicely situated academic, then we're saying things, sometimes they'll even find flaws in our logic. But they don't know what to do with it. Oh, you said this, but now you're saying that, I don't understand. They get confused. So they just know how to consistently use their logic in a way that they all agree is consistent. Right? They're already basing it on something that's inconsistent, but after that they do, just like Prabhupada says. You have a mathematical equation. If one number is wrong, the whole equation will be wrong, even though you did every other step. There's 10 steps, one's wrong, the other 9 are perfectly done, it's still wrong. So they've started with a bogus premise. Now they use this logic on their bogus premise, and very nicely. But it doesn't mean that it becomes, you know, spiritual. So that's the whole point, is if we have the proper character, we know we have that faith, we know what we're trying to, we have that commitment to Krishna consciousness, then knowing what actually you're trying to, we know the real Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. It's just a matter of discussing until you get them to understand it. So that's the point. The Madhyama then will keep going, you know, until he doesn't have anything more to say. The Uttama will always win. Right, because there's always an angle of consciousness that the other person doesn't even aware of that they can see. The Madhyama may see, may not see. You know what I'm saying? The Kanista has a tendency, is if it's a good presentation, they'll get bewildered by it. Right, so that's why we situate ourselves in the Madhyama consciousness. Right, this whole idea is being a neophyte is perfectly fine, and you know, and in fact, it's actually better and more honest than these other positions. And this is all total nonsense. No, the neophyte position is where you start. It's not recommended to stay there. Because if that's the position, then why don't we take that, hey, grade school is the real education. You don't need more than that. Because factually speaking, no one uses more than grade school, you know, English, math, and general knowledge in their day-to-day life in the world. A few specialists may, but, you know, no one else does. So therefore, then, we're going to say the grade school is actually better than all these people who've done their degrees in university, especially the PhDs. They're the most out of it. So we just, you know, they should all be just totally written off, and just, that's the grade school, that's all that's necessary, that's all there is, you know, that's what we have, you know. Yes, yes. Some people might not be so ecstatic about that presentation. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that it's not about these things. So we want to take that, but the point is it's important. But can we say as grade school is all there is? So yes, it's important that someone takes his attachments, connects it to Krishna. That's important. But to leave it at that, and that's all, because connecting the attachment is the perfection. No, developing love for Krishna is the perfection. It's one of the techniques. But if you try to take that technique that's meant for a neophyte and try to project it, that that's what the Madhyamas and Uttamas should be following, then that's a gross misunderstanding. So... So, Akasha refers to Paramatma because the text describes qualities of a person other than the Jiva, and the word Brahman means the greatest. Right? So here, then, they're saying it means Brahman, we're saying it means Paramatma. Because it's referring to a person, that's why they were taking it that it means the Jiva. But then they're saying it's Brahman, so the Jiva is Brahman. But actually it's talking about Paramatma, not the Jiva or Brahman. So here, Brahman can also mean the greatest. So that means, how you saying? Then Muhammad Ali would have been, if he was saying Sanskrit, he would have been saying Aham Brahmasmi. Yeah, okay. Sri Govindabhasya, Rishaya. Akasho havai nama rupayor nirvahita ye no te yad antara tad brahma tad amritam sa atma. The akash, okay, this is that same, okay, the akash which supports name and form, which exists without these, is Brahman and immortality. He is Atma. Because you're referring to the particular entity, then that means that use of the he here means then there's that localized personal aspect.
Mm-hmm. Right? But they say it's Brahman, Chandogya.
He is Atma, but the point is that these words all have, that's the thing, they all have their particular meaning, so the context you have to see. Because it's talking about a person, but it's talking about the, you know, this thing about existence, immortality, Atma. So those aren't qualities that you'll attribute to the feature of Bhagavan, right? But it's not a feature of Brahman, because there's the thing is that he is doing, right? So then what's in between Brahman and Bhagavan would be Paramatma. So by the context, then they're talking about Paramatma. Samshaya, the doubt is this. Does the word akasha, ether, refer to the jiva released from bondage, or paramatma, purvapaksha? It means the liberated atma, because he is also described in a condition previous to liberation. Ashva iva romani vidyuya papam. Papam, yeah. He is like a horse shaking off all sin. The present quotation. So that's how horses see us when we go for a ride. They just see us as shaking off sin. Okay. The present quotation describes the Atma liberated from names and forms. Previous to liberation, the Atma supports names and forms. Furthermore, the word akasha, open space, can indicate the unrestricted splendor of the liberated Atma. It is called Brahman and immortality because it has reached that state. Right? So they're still seeing in connection with themselves, but what they don't get, where do the names and forms come from? We didn't create them. Right? You know, now we're saying is that it comes from illusion. So illusion covers Brahman, you get the jiva. But then at other points they'll say illusion comes from the jiva. Right? They create maya. So in either case, is when it's a problem, it's maya's fault. I'm covered by maya, I give that up. But when it's their position of control and authority, then they're the one that creates the illusion. Right? But the point is where does the potency to do that come from? Because the jiva being so minute, then how does he have the potency to create the whole universe and unlimited universes? And if you say, well, there's so many living entities, but then how is it all coordinated? Right? You get two people working on a project that's already enough trouble, let alone unlimited living entities trying to hold the universe together. So that means who's controlling it? That potency has to be coming from somewhere else. Does this make sense? That's the whole position. Yeah. Okay. So they don't think far enough ahead. They'll think of aspects of Brahman, but they don't actually understand that if Brahman's all-pervading, then the illusion has to be pervaded by Brahman also, and therefore the effect of the illusion is also the potency of Brahman. So there, that it can transform, it can create reactions for us. All that potency has to be coming from Brahman. So they don't think that far. Because for them, transformation is what's causing the problem. So they don't want to have anything to do with transformation. Right? Some sense. You know, how you say? That point about first impressions. So the first impression is bad, there's a good chance then they won't deal with it. They don't want to do. That's like how you say. Sometimes you have adults and they don't like something like raw tomatoes or something. You trace it back, it was something as a kid, there was something weird about, they had something with raw tomatoes or the tomato was bad, or you know, somebody put too much salt, or there was something, it just didn't taste good, so then they attribute it to the tomato rather than improper arrangements or cooking or situation or, you know, something like that, right? So they maintain it. So the Maya bodies are the same. They have this idea that forms and transformation of these forms and their results creates pain, therefore we don't have anything to do with them. So therefore they can't appreciate that the potency of the material energy to transform is coming from Brahman. They can't see that. Right? So it's an illusion on their own part that they can't actually see reality. That's why we say that they're, you know, they're interested in transcendence, but they're not actually. They're quasi-spiritualists. Like that, you know, because there's still so much material conception is there. You can say, no, but they've reduced all the material, but they're interested in Brahman, which is unlimited, so they actually have unlimited material desire. Okay. The scriptures... No, that was up here. Okay, Siddhanta. Akasho, Akashon, Akashor, Kantara Vadi Vyapare Shat. Akash refers to Paramatma. So you can see is what's going on here in this process is that between the last Siddhanta and this Siddhanta, in other words, the verses are giving the Siddhanta. Now the last verse will bring up a doubt. Right? Then that doubt then is then covered by this verse. The doubt that might be raised by this verse, that will be covered in the next. You understand? So that's what the Siddhanta, that's what the Govindabhasha is doing, is showing what are those connections that are there. What was Vyasadeva? Why was he writing it? In other words, really intelligent person, by reading it, they'll read the thing, go through the intellectual process, you know, and then the doubt that, you know, it answers something, yes, the previous one, but some doubt remains. They'll have that doubt by reading the next one, it'll clear that one, but it may raise some others. So if they keep going by the end of Vedanta Sutra, all their doubts have been cleared. But for us, the commentary is necessary. Otherwise, you know, why are they talking about this? Right? So that's what the Govindabhasya does. It shows the connections. Right? We see that the Acharyas do that. Vishwanathakavari Thakur, Baladev Vibhushan, like that. Much of the time they put in, you know, like if they're doing Gita and other things, commentary, they're showing what's in between. That's why Krishna now said this verse. He said that verse and now he's saying this verse. We'll just read them through. But they can understand that he said that for that thing, and then from that will come up this, now will be the next step. Yes. No? Akash refers to Paramatma, because the text describes the quality of a person other than the jiva, right? Because the jiva doesn't have these qualities. You can say the jiva may have, they're saying after liberation, but in the present state he doesn't. So these qualities are saying that person is that. That means they have to always have those qualities, not sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Right? So that's then the position. Right? Okay, and the word Brahman means the greatest, right? Because we said it's about a person. So therefore, it has to be a person, but at the same time has these qualities of Brahman. So then, which person has the qualities of Brahman? That's what they're known for. Right? That's Paramatma. Right? Bhagavan is a person who's known for the qualities of interaction, loving interaction with the devotees. So his unlimited aspect isn't the prominent point. As soon as you deal with the unlimited aspect, that means then you're dealing with Paramatma. Does that make sense? Yeah. So depending upon what is there, that's the flavor that's taken. Does that make sense? Yeah. Akasha is Paramatma, only not the liberated jiva. Why? Because of other indications. Huh. ran out of time. Okay. Okay, so we'll stop here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki.